While the terrorist attack on Wednesday in London has dominated news reports and headlines in recent days, the beginning of the week focused on the death of Martin McGuinness. As the days since Wednesday have passed, our thoughts have not shifted much from those who've been hurt or tragically killed. And there is, for some, a revisiting of the 1970s and the early 1980s, when the threat of potential acts of terrorism were in the thoughts of many of those who lived and worked in London and in major cities across the United Kingdom. As people have attempted to find some understanding of why someone would behave as Khalid Masood did, there has been much exploration of his life before Wednesday, as the realisation dawned that this was not an outsider who'd caused such tragedy. The media has explored his background, searching for answers as to who or what has led to extremist behaviour. Martin McGuinness's death brought back reminders of his past. While in recent years he's tried hard to live up to his hope of being a man of peace, those whose lives were so tragically devastated by his potential involvement in the actions of the IRA have struggled to see the new person. Instead, their long-held anger and pain at the loss of people they loved has kept the two images of Martin McGuinness in sharp focus. The wide-ranging views of people of all political persuasions and none have offered the complex image of a man. Our gospel story offers no immediate tragedy on which to reflect upon these two events, but it does bring into focus how quickly one characteristic or perspective about a person can become the defining image by which they are known. I'm very grateful to Moira that at no point over the weekend has she challenged that I asked her to read the whole of that reading. I think it's really important that when it comes to some of these stories, we have the opportunity to hear the whole of the story, to hear all of the things that are happening, rather than to just pop in on a moment and only hear that. Because sometimes in the hearing of a whole story, we notice that there are repeating patterns, repeating phrases that actually give us a bigger insight. Within the first 8 verses of the story, a man regains his sight. And yet, for all of the story, the knowledge of his blindness never leaves him. That persistent characteristic of being blind moves from being a flaw in his genetic makeup to becoming a flaw of those who encounter him, as they demonstrate an inability to see anything other than the disability that had once hindered his life. Gail O'Day in the New Interpreter's Bible Commentary on the Gospel of John describes the story of the man who can now see as a Greek play. In scene 1, we meet Jesus and the disciples. At the start of scene 2, the disciples slip into the background as the action takes place between Jesus and the blind man. At the end of the scene, Jesus leaves. In scene 3, the village and neighbours appear and ask the man who can now see how his eyes have been opened. They can't quite believe it's the same man. In scene 4, the village takes the man who can now see to the Pharisees who investigate the healing. I'm coming back to the Pharisees, so I'm not going to linger too long on scene 4 just yet. However, it's their inability to see that we are to notice in the scene. Their understanding of rules and law is challenged by the events of the healing, and they're blind to the possibility that perhaps God's action has happened out with their expected pattern of understanding. Seeing only sin in the unexpected pattern, their only decision is to throw the man out of their group so as not to contaminate. In the final scene, Jesus returns to speak to the man who can now see and to confirm, at least for him, that the activity of heaven has happened within his experience. Jesus also confronts the Pharisees and demonstrates to them their own blindness as they're unable to see the light of heaven in their midst. There has to be an element of at least attempting to understand the Pharisees' perspective as they negotiate the occurrence of a healing. While we recognise Jesus as the gatekeeper on who belongs to God, within the communities they lived, the Pharisees were the gatekeepers on who belonged and who didn't. What we're offered in the Gospels is a stereotype of the Pharisees, an extreme of the worst behaviour that they might have exhibited. In the same way that Ricky Fulton offered a stereotype of a Church of Scotland minister, dour, grey and male, the Gospels portray the Pharisees as unshakable from their rules, using them to keep people away from God. And yet, within the Gospels, there are moments when we catch a glimpse of the Pharisees who don't fit the stereotype, encountered in Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, and even within the play that we heard this morning. By using a stereotype, we, the reader and listener, are provoked to notice the judgments we make about others. We're provoked to notice the people, places and situations we've excluded or turned a blind eye, not allowing the light of God to shine. Both the disciples and the Pharisees examine the theological issue of where the blindness came from. Within the Old Testament, there are passages that indicate that illness and limited abilities could be the result of sin, and so you might find it in the Ten Commandments or in the book of Ezekiel. But equally, there are passages that do not support this thought in Job and Ecclesiastes. While the disciples and the Pharisees are focusing on the why of why this happened, Jesus is focusing on the how it can be changed. What light can be cast? At the time of Jesus, light was considered an element or substance in its own right. It was a substance that radiated from people, flowing from their bodies, allowing them to see. To be without sight suggested that there was no light within the human frame, and instead those bodies were overwhelmed with darkness. Jesus challenges that understanding for the Pharisees and offers light as a gift of God. Only in the encounter with the divine presence were people truly able to see, whether they had physical sight or not. Searching after God brought light in knowledge and experience. In healing on the Sabbath and in the using of mud to heal, Jesus plays with the creation story and challenges the Pharisaic understanding. They see his behaviour as contradictory to the creation story. He fails to honour God's request for a day of rest. The word kneading suggests working, and good Jews were not supposed to knead dough on the Sabbath. But more than just the action is seen as heretical, for Jesus' actions go against the claim in the creation story that everything that God has made is complete and good, because he changes the creation. He takes the elements of creation and makes a new creation as he restores sight and light in a human frame. What's particularly interesting about the man who can now see and Jesus is that neither of them is prepared to be hindered by the crowd, whether that be the village or the Pharisees. Instead, they're both looking to the future, looking for where the divine presence will next cast light. They're looking beyond the exclusion zones to find out who needs to be brought closer to the experience of the presence of heaven. If we focus on the behaviour of the Pharisees and the villagers, though, it invites us to look at the behaviours we exhibit that exclude people rather than welcome them. What rules, regulations, current patterns of behaviour, expectations of church have we become so defined by that we demonstrate a stereotype of what it means to be a church member, or dare I even suggest a member of Dunfermline Abbey. What are the things that we so tightly cling to that we're not prepared to let the light of heaven pour through and make space for those who hope to encounter the love of God? We're asked to open our eyes and break our own rules, where they're distorting our own and other people's experiences of God's love. At times that's challenging and uncomfortable. It might hurt as we leave behind familiar patterns to explore new shores and new ways of being. But Christ's light calls us forward from the shadows of the past to encounter new places, new people, new activities that allow us a greater understanding of God in the midst of human life. Just as I was settling down to tidy up my sermon, I caught a glimpse of the film The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, and it was just a glimpse. It was one scene. It was the scene where the guest is standing at reception complaining about the dump of the hotel they've arrived at because the brochure has been photoshopped. And their host, Sonny, assures them that everything will be all right in the end. If it's not all right, it's not the end yet. Learning to live as the people of God with our eyes wide open to all that Christ casts light across means that we will see the downtrodden, the lonely, the cast aside, the ignored, the outcast, and the hungry. These are images that should make us feel uncomfortable. They should challenge us to live differently, to live as those who seek to make a difference in the presence of Christ. And while that makes our living turbulent and sometimes hostile, we live with the assurance that perhaps if it's not all right in the end, at least the future with God is hopeful and merciful. Amen.